become aware of a hidden opposition in the inconscient regions of nature, the general life. Not only that, even in himself, he becomes conscious that there is something concealed which is in collaboration with the identical element in the universe, and it has been hiding in him, obstructing the higher things from their hidden origins. A veiled collaboration with the night, even in himself, survived and hid from his view. Still, something in his earthly being kept its kinship with the inconscient whence it came. Now, when they use the word inconscient capital, it is the collective inconscience. Mother also observes that when you come to the inconscient levels, there is nothing individually inconscient. It is the universal inconscience spread out everywhere. So, anything happening at any point at the inconscient level communicates itself everywhere. And that is how, when she was working on her body cells and she came to the levels which were near the inconscient, anything that happened in the universe registered itself in her body at that level. So now Ashwapati finds something in his earthly being kept its kinship, relationship with the inconscient whence it came. Because the individual inconscient is derived and survives on the support of the collective inconscient. A shadowy unity with a vanished past, treasured in an old world frame, was lurking there. Vanished past, because he has worked so much on himself that all the negative elements have been eliminated and all things of the past have vanished. But still, he says, something in himself treasures its relation, its unity with what has been wiped out from the conscious levels. Treasured in an old world frame. World frame is his body, receiving all the world impacts, was lurking there. A shadowy unity with a vanished past, treasured in an old world frame. I'm sorry. Now this vanished past, once it has been ejected, thrown out from his individual system, finds its dwelling place in the world frame, in the world body. And something in him has a shadowy, not a concrete, but a fleeting unity with what has been rejected from himself, but which abides in the collective world frame. And that is secret, unnoted by the illumined mind. Ashwapati's mind is no more the normal rational mind, It has been purified, it has been processed, and has become the illumined mind. But even that fails to notice this secret liaison between Ashwapati's nature and the outer nature in the universe. And that thing, so secret, so treasured, still murmured at the mind's and spirit's choice. Ashwapati's mind has chosen something high. His spirit has opted for something still higher. But this thing in the subconscious murmurs, protests that the mind and the spirit have decided something else. It not only murmurs, it not only whispers, its treacherous elements spread like slippery grains in the subconscious level, inconscient level. This secret unity with the unpurified elements in the universal nature. Now, poetically he describes how these elements are treacherous. They betray. They are going to betray Ashwapati as he advances. And how do they betray? They spread themselves like slippery grains, small grains which are spread out, and anyone who steps upon them is likely to slip. And they have been deliberately spread, these slippery grains, so that hoping the incoming truth might stumble and fall. The truth that is descending from above should stumble, should slip, stumble and fall. That's the intention of the subconscious elements. That's their way of sabotaging the higher descending truth. That is one. Second, his own subconscious elements protest. They block. Next, an old ideal voices wandering moaned. There are so many ideals. Ideal of justice, ideal of beauty, ideal of harmony, ideal of unity. All these mental ideals, they do not want to go, to be replaced by spiritual, eternal ideals. So they moan. They are giving a suppressed cry because they have to depart. And what do? Old ideal voices wandering moaned and pleaded for a heavenly leniency to the gracious imperfections of our earth. The ideal voices of the old world, they are pleading, don't be too hard with the imperfections of the earth. After all, they are a grace of their own, and they have been there long. So they said, be lenient, let them continue at least for a while. Pleaded for a heavenly leniency to the gracious imperfections of our earth and the sweet weaknesses of our mortal state, our mortal condition. Our mortal existence has its imperfections, but they too are sweet. As long as they last, they are sweet. Don't debar them, don't eliminate them. So these old ideal voices plead with the incoming higher truth to bear for a while, to let them continue. Now Ashwapati, having become conscious that these things are still surviving in him, says, this now he will to discover and exile. He made a will that he would now discover these treacherous elements in himself, exile them, drive them away, the element in him betraying God. He sums up all that betrays God, goes counter to the presence of God, lands him in difficulty. He wants now to exile. So what does he do? All nature's recondite spaces were stripped bare, all the profound and hidden spaces, areas of nature were thoroughly exposed to the light. Nothing was could be allowed to be concealed. All nature's recondite spaces were stripped bare, all her dim crypts and corners searched with fire. Crypts, hollows, caves, hidden places, dim, they were not lit. Now all those he searches with fire, with the new light that he has got. The crypts and corners where refugee instincts and unshaped revolts, that is, instincts, potential revolts, which have run away from the conscious and waking levels and are trying to find a hiding place in the inconscient regions. They could shelter, find in darkness sanctuary. This is where dim crypts and corners, where refugee instincts and unshaped revolts could shelter, find in darkness sanctuary against the white purity of heaven's cleansing flame. They were afraid that in the act of cleansing they will be eliminated by the flame from heaven. So they are running away, and they found a place, or they were trying to find a place in the crypts and corners of nature, which are now being searched with fire, fire of illumination. And as a result, all seemed to have perished that was undivine. All that had remained in him with this undivine character, that seemed to have perished, yet he is conscious some minutest dissident might escape. Dissident, one who doesn't accept the discipline, the order of things that is being imposed. So some part or some element may be there, however minute, however small and thin, it might escape and still a center lurk of the blind force. And if such a minute dissident, dissenting element were to escape and survive, it becomes a center for the action of the blind force. That is why it is dangerous. For the inconscient too is infinite. The inconscient is not small. It extends and extends, just as the superconscient is infinite. The inconscient too, in a different way, is boundless, is limitless. Because it is to say the other face of the superconscient. for the inconscient too is infinite. There is no limit. You can't say now I have reached this boundary and inconscient is over. Inconscient continues. The more its abysses we insist to sound, the more its depths we sound, the more it stretches endlessly. Then, lest a human cry should spoil the truth that is descending shall not be spoiled by some human groan, human pain. So what does it do? He tore desire up from its bleeding roots. Desire had roots in the subconscious. He tore it and tore it so thoroughly that it came out with its bleeding roots. And the place that was vacated by the throwing out of this desire, he offered to the gods the vacant place. After denuding himself of desire, plucked from its very roots, that vacated place he offers to the gods. Thus could he bear, it's only then, when he purified himself with that thoroughness, thus could he bear the touch immaculate. Immaculate, pure, virgin touch. With the least impurity, one can't bear it. So, after undergoing this thorough self-scrutiny and self-purification, he is able to bear the touch of the immaculate. And after that, a last and mightiest transformation came. He has undergone many transformations, but now is the final transformation, and that is, his soul was all in front like a great sea. He was aware of only his soul, not his mind, not his life, not his body. And it was endless. It was like a vast sea, flooding the mind and body with its waves. The mind became the soul, the body became the soul, and his being spread to embrace the universe. His being enlarged itself, expanded and expanded, till it embraced the universe. United the within and the without. In its movement of expansion, no division was left between what is inside and what is outside. They were both comprehended. United the within and the without to make of life a cosmic harmony. No conflict. Whole of life became a cosmic harmony, an empire of the immanent divine. The whole world became the kingdom ruled by the immanent divine. As we have noted earlier, the divine in manifestation has three stations. One is the transcendent, above the manifested creation. Second, universal, spread out everywhere, and immanent, in each form it dwells. Not only it pervades the universe, but it indwells each form. That is how in each human being, in each object, in the universe, there is the divine. This is called the individual divine or the immanent divine. So the divine which has been concealed so far now is able to rule, to make it an empire openly. In this tremendous universality of being, not only his soul nature and mind sense included every soul and mind in his, that is, the unity is not only at the level of the soul, at the level of the mind, but even the life of flesh and nerve, even the physical and the subtle physical, nerve and flesh, was changed and grew one flesh and nerve with all that lives. His flesh, his nerve became one with the flesh and nerve of all that lives. He felt the joy of others as his joy. He didn't stay aloof. He didn't shut himself in his spiritual walls. But he was so universal that he participated in the joys of others as his own joy. Not only joy, he bore the grief of others as his grief. He voluntarily suffered, bore the brunt of others' grief. His universal sympathy, his sympathy had no limits, not limited to his own people, his own circle, his own group, no. It was universal. Identified with everything in the universe, sympathizing with everything, it abhorred immense like ocean, the creation's load, the load of the whole creation, his sympathy upbears, upholds, as earth upbears all beings' sacrifice, as the earth supports and holds up the sacrificial ritual of all beings, all creatures. Thrilled with the hidden transcendence, joy and peace, Ashwapati's universal sympathy is upbears everything, and he is thrilled with the transcendence, joy and peace. So in him all the three dimensions are united: the immanent, the universal, and the transcendent. Thrilled with the hidden transcendent joy and peace, there was no more divisions, endless scroll. Scroll is a list of items. So, things divided from each other. There was no more divisions, endless list. One grew the spirit's secret unity. All nature felt again the single bliss. The bliss that was one at the time of creation and was thereafter fragmented by the rise of ego and desire. With the elimination of these divisive elements, all underlying bliss became one. There was no cleavage between soul and soul, no separation. There was no barrier between world and God. Overpowered were form and memory's limiting line. Form, as we see it, each form is limited to itself and keeps it separate from other forms. Similarly, memories, secret life. When you remember something, your knowledge is limited to what you remember. So that limiting line of memory and the divisive outline of form was overpowered by this unit wave of unity. The covering mind was seized and torn apart. The mind that covers the knowledge, the mind that covers the light, the mind that covers the unity is seized and torn apart. It was dissolved, and no more, and now no more could be. The one consciousness that made the world was seen. With the destruction of the various elements that create and perpetuate the division, the one consciousness that fathered this world was seen. All now was luminosity and force. Abolished in its last thin, fainting trace, this circle of the little self was gone. Even our self, which is the purest portion, is itself. It is separate in functioning from the cosmic universal self. Even this, he says, the last thin, fainting trace of the circle of the little self was obliterated. The separate being could no more be felt. He could feel himself, no more feel himself separate. He was one with the universal being. It disappeared and knew itself no more. His separate little self disappeared in the oceanic being of the infinite. Lost in the spirit's wide identity, his nature grew a moment of the all. His energies, his functioning nature, became one wave, one moment of the all. And what was that moment for? Exploring itself to find that all was he. Each moment of his was exploring to discover that all was he. His soul was a delegation of the all. God was all, God as all. And of this all, his soul was a projection, a delegation that turned from itself. The self, the soul, has at this stage turned from itself to join the one supreme. The self is no longer interested in having its independent existence. Transcended was the human formula. Ashwapati has gone beyond the human formula. Man's heart that had obscured the inviolable, the reality that cannot be touched, that cannot be soiled, but that has been obscured like a film by the heart, man's heart of emotions. That heart assumed the mighty beating of a god's, like the beating of a god's heart. This heart, which has so long obscured the inviolable, becomes one with the God's heart. He's not only his heart, his seeking mind seized in the truth that knows. Seeking mind, the mind seeks for knowledge. And now, when the knowledge of the truth is there, self-evident, the truth is there that knows itself, mind has no more function. And the mind seized. His life was a flow of the universal life. He stood fulfilled on the world's highest line. He has reached the zenith of the manifested universe, awaiting the ascent beyond the world. Awaiting the ascent beyond the world, awaiting the descent, the world to save. He can ascend all right and go beyond the world, but to save the world, to redeem the world, there has to be a descent. So having arrived at the frontiers of the earth, he waits in order to ascend, cross over beyond the world, at the same time awaiting the descent of the higher consciousness, of the higher power, which alone can save the world. So these two movements, ascent and descent. Ascent to save oneself and descent to save the world.
Here ends the satsang session of 5th May 1985.